Are you feeling it, Joe?
Feeling what?
Bobby Mania.
No.
No?
Why?
Trump and Kennedy.
Yeah.
One of the Kennedys.
The dream team.
The dream team.
Yeah.
The Trump-Kennedy unity government.
What about Israel?
Shh, don't, huh? Don't mention the elephant in the room. Just,
why?
Just stay focused.
Really?
What about Israel? Yeah, I know, that's a problem.
What about loving Israel?
Yeah.
For anybody who doesn't love Israel.
But Israel's always a problem. Can we just pretend that's not an issue and then celebrate Bobby Mania?
Good luck, no.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. I'm a bit of an extremist in that respect. It's all or nothing, you know.
You're such a Puritan.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
It's interesting, isn't it, that like a year ago, you were trying to forecast how this would play out. And you knew Bobby was going to feature somehow or another. We were thinking it's more like, I think your scenario was either war for a type of US version of a hung parliament, where if Bobby is indeed what not accepted as a Democratic nominee, which is what we saw happen, but that he would form an independent party and run kind of like Ross Perot in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Just instead, though, he kind of did formally say, I'm no longer...
He ran as an independent originally.
Was Kennedy as an independent?
Yeah, he was running as an independent, yeah.
He was, okay. But now he's teamed up with Trump.
Mm-hmm. He suspended his campaign and just supported Trump. He hasn't, I mean...
It's nothing formal.
He hasn't teamed up. Well, I don't know. There may be something. It was that leaked phone call, which means he might get some kind of position in the Trump administration. But, like, that's all a bit premature, you know? You're going to get a Kamala administration, so...
Well, this is it, like... Yeah, so you know the guy who's like who makes the forecast for the White House, and he's gotten everyone right except Al Gore, which we know is a switcheroo. So he, in a sense, he did get that one right too in 2000. He's predicted everyone since the 80s correctly. Alan Lichtman, it's got his 13 keys to the White House. He's predicting the win for Harris, which is unbelievable to me, but maybe I'm not paying enough attention. So this was this week, yeah. Kamala Harris will win election, predicts leading historian. I think that's, yeah, must be his background, historian Alan Lichtman. The so-called polling Nostradamus, said to have correctly forecast since 1984 all races except Gore's loss. Win, but whatever, says Trump on track to lose. I was like, what the hell? How is he basing that? Well, here's a little, he gives some, CNN had him on here, and he explained, he didn't go through all of, he gave 8 of his 13 keys to the White House, which we can look at in a second, to Harris. And here's some of his reasoning in his interview with CNN. So he got Trump right in 2016, for example. When no one else was predicting that. No one in, you know, official academia.
My next guest, known as the Nostradamus of U.S. elections for correctly predicting 9 of the last 10 presidential races, using his own 13 keys to the White House, criteria a candidate must win in order to achieve victory. Well, he now says that he's ready to call the race. American University history professor Alan Lichtman joins me now. Professor, all right, here it is. Who will win the next president of the United States?
According to the keys to the White House, which have been right for 40 years, we are going to have a precedent-breaking victory.
Mm.
Kamala Harris will be president of the United States.
Now, I'm looking at the true keys, the false keys, and you have some TBDs on the screen as well. Under your criteria, Harris obtains 8 keys, the minimum, by the way, to win, according to you. But can any of these keys potentially flip before the election? I mean, you've got social unrest. If that breaks out, have you ever changed your prediction?
I have never changed my prediction once I've made a final call. The notion of an October surprise is a myth. All my predictions have been before the October surprise, and they have all held. Social unrest doesn't suddenly emerge. It takes a long time for there to be enough social unrest to turn the key, which requires massive, sustained social unrest. With a maximum of five keys down and likely four, Harris is well short of what's needed to predict her defeat and give Donald Trump the White House again.
Well, there you go. Amazing.
What do you think?
I'm convinced.
Yeah?
Not.
So he focused on one, prolonged social unrest. But, like, if you look at some of the others, can you go back to it, actually, and sort of freeze frame where CNN has shorthand phrases for the eight he gives her?
Change my prediction.
Okay, so there. Primary contest. Let me flesh it out for you. This is from American universities, so I think that's where he works. The full key name or concept is primary contest. There's no serious contest for the incumbent party nomination. Yeah, because they didn't have one. I mean, obviously there wasn't a primary contest, but that was rigged that way. Mm-hmm. There was arranged that way, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there was no serious contender. So all the Democratic Party faithful rallied around Harris. Well, RFK Jr. was polling at 20%.
Yeah, but that's still a key in that sense, where if there is no primary contest for whatever reason, then it just means that it's all focused on one person. That's probably what's behind his thinking on that, you know?
Right. And okay. Second, no
potential split in the vote, basically.
Related to that would be a third party contender. So in the 90s, a Ross Perot. Mm. The full title of that concept is third party. There is no significant third party or independent campaign. Well, RFK. Was that not significant?
No.
Not enough. Okay.
Apparently not.
So we give her that.
Not officially recognized. So,
short-term economy. Basically, the U.S., that's where the economy is not about in or about to enter a recession. Okay, but just about. I mean, the financial press is like, we're barely hanging on here. They say, yeah, that's indeed the case. According to the numbers, in a contrived sense, but what about Biden inflation? I mean, they've created the appearance that is fine now, the inflation issue, but it's not. There's been a real inflation jump in their term, Biden and Harris.
Mm.
And related to that, long-term economy. So the definition for that is real per capita economic growth during the term equals or exceeds mean growth during the previous two terms. So in the Biden-Harris term, economic, well, yeah, in a contrived sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can.
It's all contrived.
It's all contrived. But then it's garbage in, garbage out, surely.
No, it's appearance. Everything's about appearance.
Right.
Which is what politics is about, right?
Yeah.
It's all about, forget about looking at what's actually happening, as long as it, what appears to be.
What
happening.
Appears to be. Well, then the next one, well, policy change. The full explanation of that is policy change. The incumbent administration, so that's Biden-Harris, affects major changes in national policy.
That's a positive.
Yes, that they do something significant in their term.
Hmm. To make people want to vote for them again. Yeah,
yeah, and that is obviously favored by the voters.
Ooh, he'd probably...
Ukraine war?
He'd probably cherry pick some bullshit. Social unrest.
So that's wishy-washy. Social unrest is what he focused on in the clip we just saw. Yeah. And yes, I suppose you have to give him that. There's been none, but my God, there could have been if they've kept on going with those vax mandates. You had BLM type people out in the streets in New York in 2022. No one remembers that now. You know, it's a whole election cycle away from it.
Well, he talks about intense social unrest.
Yeah, in fairness, yeah, they didn't have that.
White House scandal. Yeah,
again. White House scandal, as in the incumbent administration is untainted by major scandal because the media covered up the laptop.
Yeah, again, it's about what...
The Ukraine.
What he perceives as the perception of the average American. How much, and that's dependent on the media.
And the last one, surely this is bullshit. So what it is it's framed in the negative, challenger charisma. So in this case, it would be It's number 13 on his list. Challenger charisma, the challenging party candidate, that's Trump, is not charismatic or a national hero. And that, therefore, by implication, she is more charismatic than him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until fucking four weeks ago, not even Democrats would have thought that.
Yeah, objectively, that one's bullshit. Like, Challenger charisma, like, at least, like, Trump is, you know, probably, between the two of them, obviously, Trump would have seen as a bit of a national hero after the assassination attempt. Oh,
absolutely. Even Zuckerberg was like, dude, that was awesome. So, he's given 8. I'm giving 6, which leaves 7. So, I think this is Gigo. But the thing, this is even newsworthy, is because he does have a record of calling it. It's ironic because he got bashed in 2016 for calling Trump correctly. And they said, well, no, yeah, but it's not based on the popular vote and stuff. And so he actually got that one wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He did, he got it right. So that bothers me that he's right here. If he's right, my God. Anyway, see, but this is 2 months ago. I'd been with all the with that debate with Biden hiding and Harris. I thought that's it. They're cooked. Everyone thought that, but now what the hell? They have wall to wall coverage for Harris. They just stopped talking about the Trump assassination attempt. And now,
Harris is all about the joy as well.
The joy. Is this how it's gonna go out? Like with a whimper, she's just gonna win with a little bit of rigging, maybe. But
yeah, it may well be the case. This is an example of
horrifying thought.
Yeah, with a whimper, maybe. This is an example of just a bunch of the media doing that thing where the media all seems to be on song, bizarrely, you know, supposedly, you know, independent media. So, New York Times talking about joy is fueling Kamala's campaign. The Harris Waltz ticket wields joy. Harris and Waltz sees on joyful message. Without popping the joy balloon, Harris is pushing joy. Harris and Waltz Democrats' joyful campaign. Watching Kamala Harris embrace her own joy. Harris and Waltz reintroduce joy. Democrats' joy is unconfined as Harris and Waltz take that kind of thing. Bringing back the joy.
If anyone's seen Blade Runner 2, they'll be creeped out by that. Because joy is the name of this AI bot woman. That the protagonist is in love with, but she's not real. Joy.
Mm-hmm.
She features everywhere in the movie, but because she's AI, she's not. She can be on a billboard, she can pop up in security messages, she can be in your home. That's Kamala. She is currently saturating
We didn't talk about the DNC recently, did we? Or the last time? We missed out on the DNC, did we? The joy at the DNC?
Probably, yeah.
Those are
mid-August.
There was a Dwayne Elizondo Camacho, Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew
moment.
Camacho the Third.
I know, it's DNC. Idiocracy come to life.
Check this out.
Yeah!
It's hard to believe.
Hey, turn out for what?
This is the official.
Turn out for what? Let's go, let's go. Turn out for what?
Hey, official gathering.
Get your hands up. Hey, everybody get your hands up. Hey,
one of the two major political parties in America now, where all the serious political figures are. Come on now. Get down. I don't know who that guy is. In a way, that's probably
Mr.
enough.
Secretary, the South got something to say.
You can just stop
I'm
there.
Congresswoman Akima Williams, chairwoman of the Democratic Party of Georgia.
Yeah, we don't need to watch anymore.
Of President Jimmy Carter.
Hello.
He wants to see it. He's enjoying it. Scott, he's mesmerized. Yeah. I remember we were criticizing the RNC for being a bit camp.
Well, it was just as bad, like with Hulk Hogan and
Hulk Hogan is almost like, huh? He's at least, you know.
But it's a joke. It's not serious. It's not serious at all in any way. There's no seriousness in American politics. It's bread and circuses up the wazoo. Like, it's ridiculous, extreme. There's nothing sober or serious about it. It's entertainment. Politics is entertainment. That's all. They're basically just like, it's like reality TV. They just want to see fights and bullshit and, you know, slapping and drama. That's all people want to see in politics, apparently. And that's what they give them. It's definitely late stage empire going on right there. Sad. Anyway, I don't know. There's no point in even trying to predict it. Could be rigged, could be not rigged. I don't know. I don't think anything big necessarily is going to happen between now and the end of the year, apart from the actual elections in America and maybe the end of the war in Ukraine. Or not the end, but...
The end of the war before the election? Doesn't look like it, the way it's grinding on.
No, I mean, it's not... I mean, it's complicated because, you know... the war can be kind of over, except for the... agreement that it's over, you know what I mean? So it can grind on in that respect. But yeah, there's a bit of grinding to do still. But I think it is. It has been over for quite a long time in a certain sense. I mean, in the sense of it's been over from the beginning in the sense of who's going to win. Wondering who's going to win that war. Russia was going to win it from day one, obviously. And it's not really a typical type of. It's not a typical war, you know. It hasn't been since it began. It's not a typical war, so it's a version of America's kind of. Well, it is America's proxy war, but it's a kind of slightly different from their proxy wars in Syria and other places. But
yeah,
so it's not really a real war. So you can't really. Treat it as if it's kind of like going to go the direction of, you know, the complete capitulation of one or the other countries, because that's not what happens really in proxy wars, you know.
Yeah, it seems to have turned into what the West hoped it would be, a war of resources. Who's got more, who can last longer, who has a better tech. And the West has the edge there. The Ukraine's running out of people, but that somehow didn't stop 25,000 well-armed troops invading across the Russian border.
Yeah.
They're still there in pockets.
But not doing very much.
I mean, how do they come up with the resources for that, you know? They're wasted, but they got the PR that the pattern fits, you know? They got good PR and supposedly a negotiating point with Russia for down the road.
In theory, but... Russia could, but probably will at a certain point decide just to go and kick them out, and that'll be the end of that, you know. It was a desperate move, like, but that war obviously is about, Lindsey Graham actually, here's an example, Lindsey Graham recently was talking to Zelensky, which he likes to do from time to time, and the guy's shameless, like, it's really good in a certain sense where they feel free to come out and just state it plainly, whereas before it was always cloaked in freedom and democracy and bullshit like that. Have a listen to Lindsey. Ladies and gentlemen, queer Christmas.
I am such an admirer of what you and your country have done. You're trying to stop the Russians so we don't have to fight them. They don't want the American troops. They just need weapons to free their country of a terrible invasion. They're sitting on $1 trillion worth of minerals that could be good to our economy. So I want to help my friends in Ukraine.
So I want to help keep my friends in Ukraine.
We need our help.
Yes, we need, and we have already... The biggest help is the support of American people and support of our friends, thanks to Lindsey and his colleagues, to congressmen and senators from the United States. Thanks for this support, bipartisan support. Thank you so much.
Peace is coming.
Yes, soon.
super detached, like Lindsey Graham. You know, he can just go in there and talk about a war. Like, you know, there's trillions of dollars worth of resources, minerals.
Which will help our economy.
Which will be good for our economy. And that's why we want to continue to support Ukraine. And then Zelensky, as much of a, as deluded as he is, felt the need to kind of say, well, we want to thank the American people and, you know, talking about the people. And like, you know, Lindsey, you're really just talking there about the military-industrial complex, you know what I mean? You're just basically saying that you're having this war to enrich the military-industrial complex in America. So we need to give, a few props to the American people and bring them into this, you know what I mean? It's not just the elite's war for resources, you know what I mean? Although that's what most wars have always been. But it's good that he's saying it out loud and publicly, you know?
Yeah, you know, until recently, I don't know why I thought this, but maybe I shouldn't have, given how the media works. But I checked out. I was wondering when Lichtman said there was no scandal or major foreign policy change that the Americans didn't like during the last 4 years. I was thinking, well, surely Ukraine. I thought by now most Americans, Democrat or Republican, were against it. Mm. No, I looked at a couple of polls. And the latest are clear support for it. Even it seems with Republicans, 60 to 70% and higher.
Well, the Republicans, yeah, the uni party.
Well, it seemed to be
like Trump's not doesn't seem to be that.
No,
and he talks about it a lot, and obviously what do you call him, Kennedy. RFK Jr. isn't supportive of it at all, and Trump said it'll be over basically the day he gets elected, the very day he's going to get on the phone to Putin,
Zelensky,
and there'll be that war will be over,
and so, and he's banking on that being popular, and yet I'm looking at some of these polls and it seems it's the reverse. It's actually popular to keep it going.
Popular among who?
Well, the polls were big polls of people.
You think those people actually know what they're talking about? Like,
oh no, probably not. Like, right. It's manipulated. They just know.
So in that
Russia
sense,
bad. Russia invaded Ukraine.
So in that sense, if somebody turns around and says, "I mean, the war's
of the
over,
uninformed mass."
Right. So in that sense, if somebody turns around and says, "Okay, we're ending this war," the people, go, oh, okay. That's good too. Yeah.
I guess.
If they don't have a reason why they want the war to keep going, then they'd be just as happy for it not to keep going.
Well, my point is they believe Lindsay's and the DNC, the Democrats, when they say we have to do this. It's good for us.
For money.
Yeah, so yeah. Even when they admit it's for money in our economy.
That's a good reason. Like.
That's the full flip. Like, the Democrats are the war party. And so people there, the DNC, are pretty much cognizant now that they're the war party and that what we're doing over there is good for America, you know?
Yeah.
So
there's no downside to it.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be.
Well, that's because
it's actually a selling point for Harris.
Yeah, none of our boys American are dying. People.
Yeah,
there's no body bags coming home. No official body bags coming home.
Now the other issue is Israel Palestine. That's a different ball of wax. Again, bipartisan support officially. This is a short clip. Trump's still, you know, plugging away, going to rallies. Hasn't been shot again. This is a shorty on Israel.
And if I don't win this election, Israel, with comrade Kamala Harris at the helm of the United States, is doomed. Israel is doomed. That's a tough statement. Israel will be gone. 1 year, 2 years, Israel will no longer exist. I better win, or you're going to have problems like we've never had.
No Israel.
No country left. It may be our last election. You want to know the truth? People have said that. This may be our last election. You got to get out and vote. This could be our last election.
Just flesh that out there, Trump. Why is Israel being gone? Well, bad idea?
He says that so forcefully. So the right's criticizing him. Oh, Jesus, here we go again. He's MAGA, yet he's not. He's Israel first. There's that. Obviously, that's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's being a realist as well. If the status quo just continues, Kamala wins, MIC wins, establishment wins, Israel lobby wins. They just keep winning. They just keep getting everything their way through hook or crook. That is possible if the Middle East genuinely blows up. That may be what he's referring to.
What?
Israel can't keep doing this indefinitely. I think that's what he's suggesting. And there will be a...
Well, he says if Kamala...
If Kamala wins, therefore, it's status quo. Nothing changes.
He'll be supported. Well, he's not being open about that. He's not saying that explicitly.
No, he's not. But
is that a place that he would say that he would do something to stop Israel from waging that conflict? He would de-escalate.
Yeah.
I.e. not give them any more weapons or reduce the amount of weapons they're getting.
Yeah, or, some combination of, I don't know, Abraham Accords, come back to that, get back on the table, back to the train.
You have to infer that from Trump's rhetoric. And, I mean, there's reason to do that.
But that's a very bold claim. Now, it's hyperbole. I know it's politicians. It's but 1 or 2 years, Israel will be gone. Finished. Done. I'm throwing it out there. I'm wondering if he's thinking, these guys, whoever they are, in Israel, in the US, if they're going to keep going like this, there's going to be the end of Israel.
There'd be an escalation in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And it might be there. But that's... Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't see... Maybe, at some point, maybe, depending on how things are going, but I think a lot of water has flown under the bridge before that kind of a situation would happen. I don't see Iran attacking Israel in any meaningful way. And I don't think Hezbollah is going to do that on its own in any meaningful way. I don't think there's going to be a war between Israel and any of its neighbors in any meaningful way. Right, not in the near future, let's say. Mainly because of the support that it has from America. But if America was in a different situation and had its own problems to deal with, then therefore it's... You know, the political will to be fully behind Israel was diminished because it was focused on other problems internally. Then you might have a situation where Israel would, because of that,
find itself
kind of paradoxically
without an army.
Paradoxically, feel that we can't rely on American support anymore. So now we have to take decisive action. Or they think that they would, you know, in order to bring back American support for them. They would have to take decisive action and pull America into the conflict in the Middle East, right? They think that idea that if we started something serious in the Middle East, America would always have our back. So we might do that to try and pull them back in, and in a certain situation, they may not actually support them, and then Israel gets his ass handed to it, you know. But that's a convergence of events and circumstances that would be required there for that eventuality to happen. That's the only way I can see it happening in the Middle East. Otherwise, it's status quo, right? America's got lots of resources and energy to commit to Israel, and is committing it to Israel, regardless of the party that's regardless of who's in the White House. Something will have to change. I think. Israel's demise will be tied to, ultimately, if it happens, will ultimately be tied to the demise
of the US.
To one extent or another of the US.
Yeah, the two are in tandem. Okay, yes. Did you see this Financial Times article penned by Bill Burns, director of CIA, and Richard Moore, head of MI6? It got a lot of traction in other media because supposedly this is the first. There's a play. Yeah, Bill Burns, Richard Moore. You can imagine what they're saying. Intelligence partnership helps the US and the UK stay ahead in an uncertain world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a first because that, yeah. Everyone knows it, but it's supposed to be. It's not an institute. It's an unofficial. So it's the first in that they're both jointly, you know, writing a piece together. And it's in a British newspaper. And the short of it is...
It's the white man's burden right there.
Yeah. It's like, you know, rules-based order. We have to maintain it. It's our baby.
The white Western man's burden.
Hang on a sec. Yeah. It's basically the usual. Russia bad, we good. Therefore, we have the divine right to rule the world. But the opening is, before it gets into Russia bashing, look at the first two paragraphs. I don't think anyone... I had to do a bit of research because it's so fucking cryptic. 2 years ago, we, CIA and MI6, celebrated 75 years of partnership. 75 years since the CIA was founded. But the bonds between the US and the UK intelligence go back even further, closer to the founding of SIS, which is MI6, in 1909, when we first witnessed together the horror of state-on-state violence in Europe. I'll come back to that in a minute. Today, after the closest of collaborations through the First World War, Second World War, and Cold War, followed by a shared struggle against international terrorism, that partnership lies at the beating heart of the special relationship between our countries. We have no more trusted or esteemed allies. And I stopped there and I thought, what about Israel? Why are they excluded from this? That's a bit of an exclusive club. You know, now some people say, well, the omission is a lie. Where's Israel? I don't know. I think the whole thing smacks of Israel doesn't really count because, of course, it's tied in with both agencies and both countries. But it's just weird to me that they don't include Israel, never mind any other European country in it. Anyway, so well, go back to
the reason they don't. The reason they don't include Israel is because. I'm going to take you way back now, because I think this still holds sway. I'm going to take you back. Come with me now on a journey through space and time back to September 10th, 2001. And this story in the Washington Times. One day before 9/11, an elite U.S. Army study center has devised a plan for enforcing a major Israeli-Palestinian peace accord that would require about 20,000 well-armed troops stationed throughout Israel and a newly created Palestinian state. Naive. Anyway, so these people are called... so it's the U.S. the Army School of Advanced Military Studies, SAMS. So they were looking at the situation in the Middle East, and they were basically drawing up a policy paper, let's say.
For Bush.
So anyway, if you go down a little bit, it says the cover page for the recent SAMS project said it was done for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The study was not requested by Washington. Anyway, this was just an academic exercise. They were trying to take a current situation and get some training out of it. The exercise was done by 60 officers dubbed Jedi Knights, as all second-year SAM students are nicknamed. The SAMS paper attempts to predict events in the first year of peace enforcement operation, and sees possible dangers for U.S. troops from both sides. It calls Israel's armed forces a 500-pound gorilla, and Israel, well-armed and trained, operates in both Gaza, known to disregard international law to accomplish its mission, very likely to fire on American forces. Of the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence service, the SAMS officers say, wild card, ruthless and cunning, has ability to target U.S. forces and make it look like a Palestinian-Arab act. That was one day before 9/11. Their judicious study of the
possibility of a peace settlement. Yeah,
the Army School of Advanced Military Studies. These are like, you know, officers and trained in, you know, military strategy and all that kind of stuff, and researching, you know, all aspects of that in terms of the different intelligence agencies and military capabilities of different countries around the world. And their conclusion was, based on the obviously available data, which was a lot at that time, and there's even more today, based on the available data about Mossad, they said that it was a wild card, ruthless and cunning, and has the ability to target US forces and make it look like a Palestinian/Arab act. One day later, US forces... or the US was targeted, and it appeared to be an Arab act.
Yeah.
Very prescient. One day before. Anyway, yeah, so that's why Mossad would be kept out of that discussion of, with those two guys, the Brits. Ultimately, they're all a bunch of racists, Neil, as you should know, being one yourself.
But is that an objective assessment of Israel?
Yeah.
Today?
Even in
2001, a 500-pound gorilla, like, i.e. something that's so massive and... Oof, I'm not sure the US can contain it. When that 500-pound gorilla could be shrunk into a rabid dog in one day by withholding the arms you sent them.
But there's no difference between... but they're not going to do that, right? Because
okay.
Israel's their land-based aircraft carrier in the Middle East, as RFK Jr. has said, and they absolutely need it because if they didn't have Israel, then immediately the Middle East would fall to Russia and China, and then America would be no more. America to this day would be no more. That's the official story. That's the official thinking. That's the same thinking behind Lindsey Graham, his frequent trips to you know, press the flesh with Zelensky and big up the war in Ukraine. It's all the same. Like Ukraine is to some extent, you know, a little aircraft carrier in Eastern Europe. America's little aircraft carrier right now, it's been turned into one over the past few years because if they didn't have that there, if they didn't do what they've done, then parts of Eastern Europe would fall to Russia and maybe even China, and then America would, you know. So it's about keep, you know, what these two guys are talking about, you know, staying ahead.
Yeah.
We're in the lead and we're staying ahead. And Israel being described back then, or Mossad being described back then, well, it wasn't Mossad, it was the IDF being described as a 500-pound gorilla. That's not to say it's big. A 500-pound gorilla, the description, when you use that term, a 500-pound gorilla, it's just something that's a bit wild and untamed and can wreck things. It's only one. There's only one 500-pound gorilla, right? They're not saying it's not a legion of 500-pound gorillas. It's one 500-pound gorilla who, you know, and an angry one who would just cause a lot of destruction, but limited. Especially,
but the US, the CIA was willingly surprised by what happened the next day. They were participants to it. They wanted it to happen.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. I'm not saying it was Mossad.
This wasn't, oh Jesus, ruthless and cunning. Mossad just tricked us on 9/11, you know. NORAD was in on it. The satellites were in on it. It was all part of it.
Right, but this
integrated
is
U.S.-Israeli.
Right, but, well,
joined up.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know to what extent it was integrated. This advanced Army School of Advanced Military Studies, they're the ones who have said this, and these are just officer class military personnel who have an academic background and are looking at military strategy and, you know, politics and all that kind of stuff, and writing papers. Right, so they're the ones who are writing that the day before. And it's just, that's an objective assessment. That's, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know, like, mixing it up with, like, the conspiracy aspect that's not relevant here, you know what I mean, in that sense. It's not relevant to this study. Mixing in what actually happened or what the conspiracy explanation of 9/11 is not really relevant to, although it converges, right? So, these guys are, this is published openly. It's in the Washington Post, Washington Times was published openly. So it's interesting that they were able to just do a straight up, honest assessment of the IDF and the Mossad and come up with that explanation about the Mossad, that they can actually carry out or attack American troops or attack Americans, whatever, and make it look like an Arab act. That's the key point there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So they were able to glean that from an analysis of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, in 2001. What actually happened on 9/11, and to the extent that it was, you know, there was, you know, that's obviously a totally different story, but definitely, you know, there are a lot of people in America on 9/11 who didn't, you know what was going on. In fact, most people didn't know what was going on.
No, of course.
Most people in the government, most people in the military, most people in, even most people in the intelligence agencies, in the CIA, etc., did not know what was going on. Most of them took it at face value. You're obviously talking about a very small group of people here who position things and influence things so that these kind of things can happen. But the vast majority of people aren't party to that, you know. So,
okay. Yeah.
But I just brought that up as an explanation as to why Mossad wouldn't be, there is a special relationship. And it's like I said, it's kind of like these people are, I said racist kind of somewhat facetiously, but America, these two white guys, the head of the CIA and the head of MI6, sitting down and having a good chat about how they're top of the heap and we need to keep it that way. And you're saying, your question was, why is, mm-hmm. where's Israel? Why is the head of Mossad not there? Well, the head of Mossad is at least Eastern European, and at most a dirty Arab, a Middle Easterner. So he doesn't fit in that rarefied atmosphere of the white ivory towers of Western intelligence. Well, there's America and the UK, and then there's the Israelis. The Israelis ultimately are like a sort of...
Are they the boss, though? The final
what
boss?
Are they? They were described by RFK as a big chunk of metal. They're an asset. They're right. A military asset.
Which suggests,
that's all it is.
Suggests an underling, something less than.
Well, at the very least, it suggests they're expendable.
Hmm.
Because you burn assets all the time, right? Especially you use your military assets. This particular military asset, which has been described as a land-based aircraft carrier, that's very important to America. Yes, it's very important, and they're always going to support it. But never say never, right? And at the end of the day, the Middle East is a potential tinderbox, and it could go up in flames. And we're not going to, as much as they talk about it, they're not going to throw, they're not going to, like, you know, Israel forever, we'll sacrifice ourselves for Israel. If Israel is in the Middle East, and the Middle East is a tinderbox and always has been, and if there's something really went pear-shaped over there and Israel was no more, the Americans and the Brits would prevail.
Yeah.
So you don't tie yourself at the hip to some little shitty little country in the Middle East in the middle of a tinderbox.
That was the broader point I got from, reading too much into it probably. But can you go back to the Financial Times, the opening two paragraphs? I thought the declaration of that date was curious because 1909, why mention that? Indeed, the SIS MI6 was created in October 1909, which was the same month as the Bosnian crisis, aka the first Balkan crisis. Mm-hmm. And you go to the Wikipedia page on that. Quote, when Austria-Hungary announced the annexation of Bosnia and Herzegovina, territories formerly within the sovereignty of the Ottoman Empire, but under Austro-Hungarian administration since 1878.
Right, leading up to First World War, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand by the Ottoman Empire, Princip.
What it was, I think they freaked out in London and Washington because they were seeing cooperation between the Russian Empire and the main European powers, mm-hmm. Austro-Hungary in this case, taking up piecemeal the receding Ottoman Empire. By now, there's already a naval race between Germany and Britain,
mm-hmm.
and they're both creating new fleets of ships powered by combustion, oil. They know the oil's in the Middle East.
And they want it
so badly.
The German railroad about Baghdad.
The US, that comes later. The US and the UK, look at your world map, they're out there on the periphery,
mm-hmm.
and they're determined to prevent Russia and the European powers cooperating mm-hmm. at the Ottoman Empire's expense because they wanted to win the Middle East oil resources, mm-hmm. which is what World War One was essentially all about.
Which is what we're doing today. And this has been 100 years no change, no fundamental change.
This article bookends, it's exactly the same. The Ukraine war and this article bookends the beginning of the relationship. And these guys state, this is what it is.
Mm.
But you'd have to, it's cryptic unless you're going to look into it. Why is he mentioning 1909? So,
well, it's, oil, Middle East, basically the beginning of all that, right?
And it predates Israel. Leaving open, there's a Rothschild / Balfour Zionist proto declaration. Right. No interest in there coming in there too.
If you had your eyes, your covetous eyes on the Middle East, you would look with favour upon the establishment of a Western aligned little
and you
country
would,
in that area that was always going to
you
be.
You wouldn't want it in Mauritania or where were they going to
Uganda.
Uganda was one. That's the island off.
Madagascar.
Madagascar. No. You want to go to the homeland in the Bible, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The problem is getting back to, just to finish that point on the way the West looks at Israel, ultimately they don't really see them. They're a useful asset, and they have to play the game that way with Israel. But ultimately, if things go pear-shaped, then they'd cut Israel loose, and that would be the end of it. The point is that the really important part of that is that Israel knows that and has known that all the time. The Mossad, the Israeli politicians, and etc. They all know that, which fuels their paranoia and forces them to do all their spying and all their blackmailing. And
yeah, we can't trust them.
We can't trust them. They put as much as, in that sense, where, you know, the head of the CIA, the Brits and the Americans look at Israel in that way. The Israelis know that and look at them in the same way, in a certain sense. Well, but they're at a disadvantage because Israel can't, it's not a big enough country, it doesn't have the power to actually, you know, can't exert the same kind of power, anywhere near the same kind of power that openly through natural resources and population stuff as the Brits and the Americans can. So they have to do it by way of deception, right? They have to do it subversively. So they're paranoid. The Israelis are super paranoid. And they've got good reason to be. But that's because that's the way they've played the game, because they're playing this global domination game, and they're a bit part player in that. But they've got this drive, you know, that most other small countries like Israel don't have. And of course
that's why they're obsessed with
the Holocaust and all
that. Ensuring the United States never deviates from anything they don't like, because then they know it's curtains for them. So it's such a curious article, because it was real politics. It was frank in a sense, but then the end of the first paragraph, you know, we partnered initially in 1909 when we witnessed together the horror of state-on-state violence in Europe. That's the psychopathic part, because these shitheads basically caused two world wars to smash Europe, to prevent it from uniting with Russia and or the Middle East and creating a unified, roughly, confederation on the world island. With them outside on the periphery, you're going to fight each other for the next 115 years to this day, slaughtering each other, currently Russia and Ukraine, for our benefit.
Proxy.
It's so... But they still do.
Every war is a proxy.
It's impressive. I got to say, it's impressive.
Every war is a proxy war from those people's perspective. You know what I mean? Because they're not the ones doing the fighting. They're the ones doing the sacrificing. And that includes... You extend the concept of proxy war. Because officially a proxy war would be, you know, using someone else's armies, as in Ukraine, is a proxy war that the West is waging at the US and the Brits and the French to some extent. Or waging against Russia, using Ukrainian soldiers. But First World War and Second World War, to a large extent, proxy wars as well. It's just that they don't. Just because it was Americans and English, French dying in those wars doesn't make it any less of a proxy war. It just means that they don't really, they care as much about, to some extent, they care as much about dead Americans or dead English or dead French as they do about dead Ukrainians.
Yeah.
Except from the political perspective, and then that it might have political blowback, it might upset people back
home. They handled fine. They called riots, which erupted at the end of World War One in the US, a Bolshevik Red Scare. And they just cracked down.
Yeah.
Said, you're all commies. Yeah. Unless you stop rioting and you become patriotic again.
Yeah.
You got to love us. Yeah, it's... Yeah. Anyway, I think this article, this is not the only one. It's part of a push at the moment. I've seen British ambassadors on Sky as well, warning about Trump coming, and, you know, I think they tie all this together.
There's also Russian propaganda raised its ugly head again. And
that's part of the same campaign, I think.
It's amazing how they think they can get away with that. But apparently they can't. Apparently they think they can get away with saying Russia's stealing our election again already. That's been in the news recently. Kirby has been vocal about it, and there's been the issue about that Tim Pool and a few other influencers.
Tenet Media.
Yeah, they said 28,000. They come up with some number, 28,000 social media influencers
have been unwittingly
are all in somewhere or other.
And one was indicted, Lauren Chen.
Right.
I don't know if that means arrested, but she's in trouble legally. Yeah, it's horseshit. Tenet Media, you look it up and it's got a really dodgy Russian sounding founder, Russian sounding that no one knows anything about.
It's a,
with a residence in Belgium. It sounds to me like Tenet Media was a CIA cutout or FBI, whatever, to entrap, to get these people to sign contracts as content creators. Oh, you'll get money. Sure, yeah, whatever. And the actual content they produce was irrelevant to geopolitical anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, 2 months before the election, you can get U.S. Attorney Merrick Garland up there with head of the FBI, Director Wray, and announce this astonishing discovery that, once again, Russian influence has reared its head in our elections.
Yeah.
But it's part of a whole array of things. In the last couple of weeks, the Brazil judge banning X completely, as of yesterday, X is banned in Brazil, where there's some 25 million users there. Pavel Durov, creator of Telegram, arrested in France. He's been released, but still, that's obviously a chilling message. Thierry Breton, this French bureaucrat in Brussels, publishing a letter to Musk on X, warning him that if he published his chat with Trump last month, X could be fined 6% of the company's value for publishing extremist content. No, in fucking Europe. Europe is explicitly censoring now. You know.
But that guy, he apparently...
He aimed high.
But he said that he was disowned, basically. His statement was disowned by the bureaucrats in Europe, that he was acting on his own initiative, basically, and this wasn't their policy that they would fine Trump for. In advance for publishing an interview with Trump.
Yeah.
For Musk publishing an interview with Trump. But the Tenet Media thing is like doesn't stack up. It does sound like a kind of it's just propaganda. It's more nonsense, more lies. Basically, those couple of things that they were suggested, examples of topics that were suggested to, you know, these influencers. One of them was the Ukrainian connection to the Crocus terror attack in Moscow. Or the other, that one where Tucker went around Moscow and went around grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
They suggested that those are the two kind of main ones that they apparently are accused of suggesting to these influencers that they would reference or talk about. Here's an idea, you know. What about, look, there seems to be some connection to Ukraine with this Crocus terror attack, which there is, objectively, and then Tucker's grocery store video. And apparently for that they were paid $10 million. Doesn't seem like a lot of bang for your buck, does it? $10 million just to have a short segment on Tucker walking around a Moscow grocery store?
Like the Russians have money to throw out.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they do have money, but I think they would get much more for $10 million. Like, I mean, who are you going to give $10 million just to put, like...
They don't have full uniforms on all their soldiers in Ukraine, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, we're open to receiving millions of dollars from anybody, really, if they want us to talk about like stuff like Tucker's grocery store trip in Moscow or any other objectively true, you know, or just, you know, take on any particular topic, you know.
There was one example they cited, which was Dave Rubin.
Dave Rubin, yeah.
Bashing some transgender person, mocking them. It was like a 2 minute bite thing. Yeah. What's that got to do with Russia?
Russia's going to pay big bucks just for Rubin to say that. Yeah, because Rubin had never said anything like that before, right?
No.
Never.
Exactly. That's the thing. They've
been doing that forever.
Yeah, it's the same content they always do.
So it's nonsense. It's just more, it's ramping up. And I mean, are you surprised to see this right before an election? No. Are we surprised that I'm surprised that they're actually trying to do the same thing again? It's been fully and convincingly proven. If you remember back to what's 8 years ago now, in the lead up to the 2016 election, where the whole idea of Russian interference in our election has been proven. Maybe people forget this, but it was disproven that there was any significant Russian interference or Russian government, or there was any at all in terms of coming from the Russian government, and any Russian associated accounts that were had any influence on the election at all was not proven. And in fact, there was what was proven was DNC operatives posing as Russians, posing as a Russian or a Russian account, and talking about things that, you know, like anti Hillary Clinton stuff at the time. So they themselves were doing it because they couldn't find any Russians who were actually doing it. They had to do it themselves, much in the same way that a lot of Jews, not a lot of Jews, but some Jews have had a tendency in the past to go around spraying swastikas on synagogues to provide evidence of anti-Semitism in the Western world, because they can't find any significant anti-Semitism, or at least of that nature, in the Western world, so they have to go and do it themselves. Same way the DNC operatives had to pretend to be Russians and diss Clinton publicly on these fake Russian accounts. And as they see, they had just found a Russian account that's dissing Clinton. And it's like, yeah, but that's your account. Yeah, but same thing, right?
May as well be everyone's. You see, it's like your problem, though. You poll anyone now to ask them about Russian interference. And it's real. It's real to them. Like you said at the beginning, politics is optics. It was disproven, but most people, first association is that it's real and that it happens. They believe it. And what are you going to do? It's... They it's real for them. It was proven for them.
Well, those people are not very useful.
They're useful to the powers of be.
Yeah,
because they're the majority.
In terms of like being reality reading instruments, they're not very good.
No. You know, Tulsi Gabbard's been placed on a domestic terror watch list.
Mm.
Which she realized when she was flying around. On or about when she joined Team Trump as well. That's where we're going. You want to challenge the status quo? You pay a price. I think so far they're just annoying her with longer airport searches and stuff. But she found out that despite her military background, she's her passport flags up, and the term is operational. And they're put on it's kind of like a no-fly list. Not really, because she's still flying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically domestic terrorist watch list.
Mm-hmm.
And she found out subsequently that on several recent flights she's taken, there are air marshals incognito on board the plane.
Following her, watching her.
Yeah. It's all of a piece, you know, in the US and outside. Poor Mike Benz is pulling out any remaining hair he has, trying to get people to listen to his analysis on recently, for example, the Brazil X thing,
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, all these things lead back to the US government. That's what links them. Pavel Durov in France, if I wasn't in France, he said, you're going to find, if you don't find that the US State Department sent a memo, you'll find that there was a cutout, an NGO that's actually a government-organized NGO, a gongo,
mm-hmm.
that was working in the background. Pavel Durov was surprised when he just landed to refuel. Oh, I've been arrested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That.
What about Dick Cheney voting, coming out and supporting Kamala? Kamala.
What about it? It's perfect.
It is?
It's perfect. It's exactly what you'd expect.
Isn't he a conservative?
No.
He is officially no.
He's war party. She's war party. They're both war party. And the anti-war party is Trump.
So
Team Trump.
How would... what would Dick Cheney find in... What would Dick Cheney being a kind of arch neocon, psychopath, and lover of war, and lover of Israel, and lover of war in the Middle East... What would he find in Kamala Harris administration?
Continuity of neocon governments.
But she's anti. she doesn't like Israel.
Neocons brought it. You can say, free Palestine, but, you know.
Kamala's Democrat.
Democracy.
She likes Palestinians.
Well, Democrat is now the war party.
Dick Cheney hates Palestinians. He hates all the Arabs. He likes killing them. And Kamala likes to save them. So why would he support her?
Kamala likes to save them in the way that she has no problem sending billions of dollars of weapons that just crushed Gaza. Yeah, that's how much she loves Palestinians.
Dick Cheney's a conservative, right? Officially. He's Republican.
Rhino, yeah.
He's Republican.
Republican in name only.
Why doesn't he support Trump?
Because he said Trump is the greatest threat to democracy we've ever had.
Why?
Because Trump would
destroy democracy by becoming Caesar and become emperor.
No, he would reorder the use of the U.S. as a tool of empire.
And that's a threat to democracy.
That's a threat to U.S. democracy. That's the bullshit they tell people in America, yeah.
So when they say a threat to U.S. democracy, they mean he's a threat to U.S. hegemony.
Yeah.
Which would negatively affect Dick Cheney, if only in his black heart. Or you'd feel like that's a bad thing if America, you know, was knocked down a few rungs off the leaderboard and wasn't the hegemon anymore. Dick Cheney would feel bad about that. He'd be sad. Might not affect him financially directly, but just
in terms of... No, because he's going to die soon.
Why isn't he dead already? That's another question.
He's got a fake heart.
He's got a black heart, yeah.
A machine.
They put a...
Ticker.
They found, you know, one of those pictures they have of smokers' lungs and hearts? They put one of them in him when he had a heart transplant. No, they didn't. They put the heart of... lizard
of Mendes a goat
no the, yeah the goat of Mendes no they put the heart of a monitor lizard one of those big lizards, you know,
yeah,
he eats goats and stuff. Put one of them in him and it worked fine.
Yeah,
it was the first time
breakthrough
transplant of that type.
Yeah.
So he's very old and he should be dead. No,
yeah, but he's, you know, he likes hunting kids and adrenochrome and stuff, so he keeps going.
I'm
only half joking. Maybe I should say I'm joking because you two doesn't like that topic.
41. Why is that old?
It's a real thing.
He's 83. Yeah. Well, that's Dick Cheney for you.
Are they going to win? Are they going to win somehow? That I can't. Just sickening.
Who's going to win? Is the band going to make it?
The Dick Cheney Party, the Democrats.
Are they gonna,
I see Kamala one now. Yeah.
Is Kamala going to win?
Yeah.
Well, again, it's like all discussions about, you know, possibilities for one person or another to win in a U.S. presidential election become moot points, or really null and void, in the sense that if you include the possibility of rigging, it really doesn't matter. It's not who the American people vote for, it's who the deep state decides should be in the White House. And of course they would probably decide that Kamala should be in the White House. Will they rig it? Can they rig it again? Possibly, probably. People are so apathetic. I don't... All this idea of... People talk about revolutions and stuff. Not happening. There's not going to be a revolution in any country. In any Western country, let's say. It's other countries are different kettle of fish, but in any Western country, they're all sitting, you know, they're all self-satisfied and high on the hog with their iPhones and their Netflix and shit like that. And there's not going to be any revolution in any country like that as a result of political issues, over political issues. There'll only ever be a revolution when it gets down to the nitty-gritty in terms of if people are actually suffering personally.
Yeah.
And then they won't know what. They won't have anything political, at least, to rebel about or rebel against. They'll simply be rebelling about or revolting or protesting, whatever, en masse against the fact that I'm not happy. in a very particular, direct way, i.e. I don't have enough.
The bread and circuses money. Need to dry up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is probably how it's going to go, which is depressing, but there you go. Well, it's not all going one way. Germany this week, der AfD, AfD, Deutschland Party, AfD, they won in a local election. So I had this explained to me last night. Germany is similar to the US where they have regional elections staggered. So it's a few states every couple of years or something. So two of the states had elections in what was formerly Eastern Germany. German far-right hails historic election victory in East. Finally, the AfD have won in the state of Thuringia, which is central Germany as you look on the map. But it is, like I said, part of former Eastern Germany. They probably won handsomely, but it's not this similar to France where they got a third. If you scroll down there, it shows you the table. they say at 32%. I wonder, because in the other state that held Saxony, they narrowly lost because of some last-minute readjustments. I don't know what they were, but it sounded like a bit of fiddling there. So that the CDU won in the other state. Anyway, it's, yeah, about time, but what happens now, for example, in this single state, it can't form a local government because all of the others have sworn to death to never partner with AfD. So as you see, the AfD only has a third of votes, so they can't form any kind of government at all.
Same as in France, yeah.
Same as France. Everything is just going to turn up sclerotic. This keeps up. France, of course, just about got a prime minister this week. Has he been approved?
Yeah, Macron appointed him. Macron
2 months later.
Yeah. But there's been protests. But that's the situation. Michel Barnier, he's like a career, he's like in the 70s, he's a long-term. He's French, but he's worked in the EU as a EU bureaucrat for a long time, holding fairly high-level positions. He was the Brexit minister for the EU and negotiating Britain's exit from the European Union. He's nominally a conservative and has held anti-immigrant, not far-right anti-immigrant, but saying that it should be capped and all that kind of stuff, and you know, you should reduce immigration, that kind of stuff. So Macron decided to just shove him in there, thinking that he can keep the whole thing, keep it divided, keep the, because obviously the Le Pen's party, the far, so-called far-right party that won the most votes as a single party in France in the last election. This is almost Macron's hat tip to them, but it's pathetic. It's obviously not going to satisfy them because this guy Barnier that he made.
It's like bringing in a rhino.
Yeah, exactly. Saying, here you go there, aren't you happy with that? And then obviously but the lefties aren't happy with that because they're taking it at face value that he's actually anti-immigrant, which he's not. He's a bureaucrat and he'll do whatever the higher-ups tell him to do.
Yeah.
So, but they're out in the streets protesting that he appointed this guy who is a member of a party, but a party that got 5% of the vote in the last election. So basically in France you have this coalition that was cobbled together of leftist parties to try and keep the single largest party, the Le Pen's quote-unquote far-right party, out. So these four leftist parties cobbled themselves together and then they claim themselves as a new single party, and they, in that way, got most votes and became the biggest party out of the last election, and therefore they should get, one of them should be prime minister. So, but Macron was like, nah, not going to do that. I'm just going to pick whoever I want because I am the master manipulator I'm the master overseer of French politics and how to structure French politics, with obviously me at the centre of it, because he has to be the decider.
Because I am the state.
He is Jupiter, the all-seeing eye in France, and he is
ordained
the state.
By Rothschild himself.
And it's his responsibility to keep it all together, you know what I mean? Because you can't have the chaos of the far right, you can't have the chaos of the far left. All you have is me, and I will then dispense as needed to placate you extremist people on the left and right, which apparently is most of the French population. To placate you, I will offer you this person to make you happy, and then I will offer you this person to make this other side happy.
And then I will offer you the Olympics.
And then I'll offer you some Olympics.
And then I'll offer you drag queens.
And then and
mocking Christ queens. At the Olympics.
Yes.
And everyone will be happy.
And you will be happy. I understand everything. I understand all people. I am a unique person being a closet homosexual.
Psychopath.
I have this insight into, and given that my wife appears to be transgender, I
and
have even more insight.
Me.
Yes.
It's such a freak show. It's kind of wild that France has gone from the youngest prime minister ever to the oldest overnight.
Mm.
It's happening everywhere. I mean Ireland's prime minister, and Taoiseach, he's ruling with a mandate, in quotes, of his party coming third in the last election. And that was to keep a Sinn Féin, who were lefty globalists anyway, at least. They've donned the cloaks of it. It's all bullshit.
They're making stuff up. They're
sclerotic. It's really locked and people are. There's pressure from below, and they're just like, well, just move the pieces a bit more.
Yeah, across Western democracies, you see that
they won't allow a peaceful transition of power.
Yeah, well, no. Well, they won't allow normal democracy to follow its process, and they appear to be that's seen across Western democracies that they're basically. Like you just mentioned, we talked about basically, well, you could talk about all of them, really, that the will of the people is just totally disregarded at this point. Politics, whenever the politicians in power, the kind of deep state or the establishment politicians have been there forever, you know, phony left and right, when they now see in recent years the will of the people being for something different, something radically different from what they've been offering all these years, they go, nah, you can't have that. We're going to manipulate it in some way so you get whatever we want you to get. And the people respond to that, for the most part, with, at least the politicians see the response of the population as being apathetic, and they interpret that apathy, or they interpret that the lack of outrage, let's say, mass outrage, which there should be, as people accepting. That acquiescing to your manipulation of the political process and your non-deliverance of actual democracy and of the will of the people, they're testing it, and they see the response from the most of the people is largely apathetic. So, and they go, well, that means you're fine with this. We will continue we'll become more and more brazen about how about doing this. We'll openly, like you just said, in Ireland, for example, we'll openly have a government. Who claims a mandate on the basis of becoming third in the election, or will openly, Macron will openly kind of, you know,
tell the two winners of the last election to.
Well, assume.
No, you can't have either.
Assume authoritarian control and power to himself and tell the political parties who actually won that, no, you didn't actually win, or you didn't get the most votes, or whatever. A complete subversion of democracy, and they see the response from the population is mostly apathetic, so they go, well, you must be fine with that. But I think a lot of people, at least the ones who are paying attention, look at that and go, wow, that's really fucked up. Democracy doesn't work anymore, so I'm just going to not participate anymore. I'm going to progressively, if that keeps happening, people will just become less and less interested in politics, because the only thing that really matters to people is not bread and circuses necessarily, but certainly bread and the ability to put food on their families, as George Bush once said, and to provide for themselves and their families, basically. As long as that keeps going, people appear to be, at this point, most people appear to be just happy enough with that. The problem is that you're seeing evidence of corruption and authoritarianism growing within these establishment cliques within these countries. And they will... they're already mismanaging, misruling. They're misruling politically at this point, they're also misruling economically and in other ways. But that's going to continue and get worse, and eventually get to the point
there won't
where
be enough food on the families.
Their economic misrule will cause things to go really pear shaped, and at that point, then they'll provoke the ire of the population. In the same way, like I said, then you'd have a revolution.
We see flashes of it. I mean, the riots in England.
Yeah. But then you see the response of the state, which was
they'll
throw a bunch of them in jail.
Yeah, and there's crackdown. But the next time the flare-up might be... I mean, Macron was in a year and he had the yellow vest thing.
Yeah.
That was intense.
It'll be economic.
And it went away, I know. Yeah. But
It'll either be, like you saw in the UK, what got those people on the streets in the riots in the UK was because people, vulnerable people, children in their communities were being killed by people that they perceived to be
economic migrants.
Economic migrants brought in by the government. So that's a good reason for them. That's a reasonable reason for them to protest. But that's an example. That's an example of how only those kind of things would provoke those kind of protests. The protests will be much more severe if it gets much worse than that. Because obviously it's really bad when children are killed. But there's only a small group of people are directly affected by that, or indirectly more people in the local community. But it's not a countrywide thing. But once you get to the point where you have food shortages and suffering at that level for a large number of people, then you're going to have, yes, chaos. That's the only way it can happen. All the dreams of Occupy Wall Street and, you know, peaceful protests for to make a better country.
We are at the 99%.
Yeah.
They were good times.
Yeah.
I was so left.
You were so the 99%.
I thought, this is it. 2008 financial crisis. Occupy Wall Street, and it spread, and it was everywhere. It was San Francisco. Dock mm-hmm. workers were refusing to load ships, and
yep.
And then Obama said, right, this has gone on long enough, or his handlers, and overnight, thousands of cops across the country just smashed it up.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, now you mean business. Here comes the revolution, bitch.
No, people were like, eh, and I wasn't that serious about it.
Didn't happen. Here's another atrocity recently. Speaking of stabby jihadis, it's been quite a lot. It's definitely come back with a vengeance. Remember during COVID, somebody put the word out to the Ali Akbars that the virus would kill them, so they stopped stabbing. And this year, it's definitely back to the old pattern. This is 2 weeks ago in the German city, Solingen. Knife attack at Germany's Festival of Diversity. Kills three, wounds others. It was mad. Can you scroll down a bit? Maybe they have a quick summary. I hope they do in the beginning, because they tend to avoid the actual nuts and bolts of what happened. Hunt for a man. I'm not sure if they even... It's blurred. Don't know why. Anyway, yeah, obviously you've got the irony there of being a festival of diversity, right? Whatever, I can only imagine what that was supposed to be. And then you've got the extreme, you've got the official new acceptable pan-global homo West culture, festival of diversity, and then you've got ISIS. At least that's what's supposed to be conveyed. No one ever said. Someone found, it's the same old script. Somebody finds online a claim by, in quotes, ISIS that this was our boy and he did it for Palestinians or something. It says there a 15-year-old was arrested. Not that, 15-year-old was arrested. Police said he was suspected of knowing about the planned attack, but he was not the attacker. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's 2 weeks ago. There is zero follow-up. This is what... it's like insult to injury with all of these things. Everyone knows about the riots in England. No one knows what happened to another 15 or 16-year-old who was arrested for that. We don't know. I presume he'll go to court. There have been a couple of sketches of him. It's happening. It's so consistent now that it's so totalitarian. It's freaky. It's a consistent pattern when these things happen. The attacker, who lately has usually been a teenager, he's not named, and then the media, the police, and the courts produce zero follow up. So 3 weeks ago in Ireland, it looked like they had the first stabby jihadi incident with an explicit tie-in to quote-unquote ISIS,
mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, well, this time they're going to report it at least on the surface that that's what it was. It was a jihadi inspired.
Mm-hmm.
No, nothing. They said they were looking into that at the time. Zero follow.
Mm-hmm.
You're just left with a priest stabbed outside barracks.
Right.
And that's the end. Just carry on. Keep shopping.
Yeah.
Watch Netflix. That's the thing that bothers me the most about mm-hmm. it. The lack of any kind of... It's just like... We all live in this perfect woke dystopia now in the official culture. And periodically, it's... A knife comes out and just stabs the shit out of some kids mm-hmm. and then retracts. And mm-hmm. it's still a perfectly woke, beautiful utopia. It's a festival of diversity. Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. What's stabbing? What's stabber? Soon it'll be like the next day, what's stabber?
Mm-hmm.
And only the people who saw it, and they'll be left, am I going mad? There was blood pouring out of his neck. No, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the media's like, la, 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 fucking unicorns. It's all great. Mm-hmm. That is what we're moving into. And it is scaring the shit out of me because you still have a mass of people who are fine with that.
No, they don't have an opinion on it. They're too distracted. They don't even have an opinion. They're not actively fine with it. Like, they just... Yeah, I don't think we can really understand or plumb the depths just how apathetic and distracted yeah. and dissociated and ignorant so many people out there are. And I mean, like we've talked about it before, there's a social contract, which is that most people still hold to, which is that the government takes care of things and we pay our taxes and we elect them and give them power and they take care of the big stuff so that we, the people, can just get on with our normal lives. That's a social contract. It's been there forever.
Hmm.
So there is an inherent tendency in people to go, not my business, not my job, you know, except when it's visited upon them in their local communities. You know what I mean? But the only way you'll actually get people to seriously complain and wake up to the breaking of that social contract in an egregious way is when
they go hungry. Yeah.
In some form or other.
Yeah, or they just can't pay the bills.
I meant to put this up further. I'm talking about so Putin commented on the election, right? And that's what has fueled. He must have done it just for the lols, for trolling, whatever. But he was asked about you know, who he supported, you know, was it Vladivostok, Eastern Economic Forum
yeah.
in Russia, and he was asked there, and he said, he had talked about Kamala Harris, and he said, well, he doesn't know, he says she laughs so infectiously, which, and it's so, you know, it's very interesting. It makes it seem like everything's going well for her, you know. And then he said, he basically said, in the end, it's the choice up to the American people, and, you know, we'll treat their eventual decision with respect. He ended with that, you know, but he just commented on, he claimed that he pretended, sort of half, you know, kind of jokingly, said that he'd be rooting for Kamala Harris. You know,
well, what he said was that Joe Biden said we should
right
support her. So I guess we'll just do that.
Yeah, Joe Biden says we should support her. Yeah, so it's obviously a joke, right? But yeah. Then in this story, like, so they take some, like, I mean, at the White House, so Kirby, when asked about that. Speaking to reporters on Thursday, Kirby said, Mr. Putin ought to stop talking about our elections, period.
Yeah.
Stop talking about them. Stop saying that. He shouldn't be favouring anybody one way or another. And we would greatly appreciate it if Mr. Putin would, A, stop talking about our election, and B, stop interfering in it.
Maduro.
But anyway, and then apparently when Trump was asked about this, the fact that Putin had, you know, jokingly endorsed Kamala, he said, he said he endorsed Kamala, and I didn't know if I was supposed to call him up and say thank you very much. I don't know exactly what to say about it. I don't know if I'm insulted or if he did me a favor. So it's just a joke. But like Kirby, like you know, stands up there and seriously says he needs to stop interfering in our elections.
Yeah,
those people are so pathetic. Anyway,
he's really done a number on them, Putin, just by being himself.
Yeah, you can't even see it.
I want to just talk about the weather, the wild weather. that this, it's obviously all of a piece. Something's going on at the moment. We've seen this extreme weather flip in Europe, where it's currently in like the mid-30s in Scandinavia and in the high teens in northern Spain. Have a look at the map here.
Warm in the hot, warm in the top.
Yeah, that's
warm at the top and cold at the bottom.
There's a flip, and obviously it's cold air pocket that's come in, jet stream meandering. Now, when they say cold and hot, they mean the relative difference compared to what the annual average would be. Yeah. But we experienced that. It went from mid-high 30s, it feels like high 30s, to like high teens overnight. Boom. It's crazy what happened. I think he's got the arrows pointing that this, it was kind of universally hot across the continent, so it's drifted eastwards because of the cold pull into Western Europe. And that's going to go on for another week. They're saying now this sort of, in quote unquote, polar vortex will continue into next week as well. Probably make it one of the coolest Septembers in France ever. The British and Irish Met offices both said they had the coolest and wettest summers in 10 years or something. Okay, so that's going on. At the same time, this has to be related, what's been going on in the Sahara and Northern Africa. It's extreme. It did begin in the heart of the Sahara. So we're talking like the driest, arguably one of the driest regions on Earth. So that's over towards Egypt. They had like a system formed there. I don't know where that moisture would have come from, because it's not that it blew in. This is an updated map, so the focus is now over on the Western Sahara, facing the Atlantic. But a week ago, it actually began where the white area, so southern Libya, northern Chad, bit of Egypt. It was an intense downpour. So the red down there in the middle, that's the usual tropical band. It stays there. And it's very strict. It rarely ventures north, certainly in recent times. They might get rainfall like once a decade. But they've been getting like an inch or more in the center of Sahara.
It's that curve up in the circle, not your point.
It's curved. It's got to be. It's got to be part of what's going on with the jet stream north of it. Currently, the focus is now on all the way up to Morocco. There's mad flash flooding in southern Morocco. This one here is from yesterday. Not the first time in recent years it's happened in Morocco, but it's expected to keep going, bending up along the West African coast and then into Algeria. They're expecting flash flooding and thunderstorms and hail and everything in northern Algeria in the coming days. And so I was like, well, how unusual is this? You can play this next video. It just shows it claims it's today. No, this is from yesterday, 7th September. And Ouarzazate province is somewhere in the south. So it's a mountainous region. Maybe that's why it'll get more precipitation. But these places like can see an inch of rain over a decade in some places. You know, to end up with rivers of water is like unheard of.
It's a greening of the desert.
It's something like that, maybe. I mean, if it kept up, I have an article that makes reference to that you know, maybe they don't know when exactly, but 5,000 to 7,000 years ago, most of the Sahara was green. Look at this next one. This is also unusual to see such widespread lightning activity. This is currently ongoing. If you click on that image, does it spread further east in Sahara? No. Okay, it's just there, but it continued further. So that kind of, I don't know about the electrical part of it, but that level, that band of precipitation that you see going through the center of the Sahara is normally to the south.
Mm-hmm.
So now, final piece of an article talking about all this on severeweather.eu. And you'll recognize this, Joe, because you've been saying this for a good while about the band of precipitation. So the intertropical convergence zone, this article makes the case, has shifted north. If you do a search for, oh, no post found? Was something wrong with that? Hang on. I have it here. This should... Hopefully this works. From the second. This is actually from last week. Okay, do a search for the letters ITCZ. Okay, so if you look on the, they have an exemplar of the graphic above the text I'll read now.
Mm-hmm.
In black is the area currently being saturated with hail, lightning, and deluges. It's usually locked in there in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, that's
so the monsoon. That tropical rainfall belt is called the intertropical convergence zone. Right. It's basically a band of clouds, shower, storms, and rainfall.
It travels. It's all around, like it varies, but it's around the globe at around that level, which is around equator level. And it's what provides monsoons in Asia, in Africa. And
it's part of the engine that provides Atlantic hurricanes, which have stopped. They don't understand. There's supposed to be a whole bunch of them. We had a record early one this year and then nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So in the paragraph at the bottom there, in the image below, you can see the latest ITCZ analysis by NOAA. The black line shows the normal expected position of this tropical convergence belt, but the red line shows the actual position, the current position of this anomaly, and you can see it has shifted much to the north. Now that may not look
quite
like
a large
much,
distance, actually,
but for that area, that can have a knock-on effect that's huge. Okay, now, so it doesn't look like much, but it has resulted in some in all that rain in Sahara. Okay, scroll down to the subheading: Rainfall in the Desert Begins. Yeah, here. So over half of the Sahara Desert receives less than an inch of rainfall each year. But a full-on rainfall event across most of the desert is not something we see. Usually, maybe even every decade. Okay. Okay, many regions of a few years. Okay, scroll below this image. This is some areas of the desert see more than an inch of rainfall each year. Are forecast to see, that is, right now, this week, which is 5 to 10 years worth of precipitation, which is remarkable enough in itself. The image below shows the forecast of total atmospheric water compared to normal values. As you can see, over the Sahara, the values are on the magnitude of 5 to 8 times over the normal values, making this event in the range of roughly once in several thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
I can't vouch for that analysis, but because I'd have to look at it more closely and stuff. But they're severe weather Europe. They do great articles. They do them sparingly because they normally just keep track on sort of raw data and maps coming out of NOAA and stuff, but occasionally they weigh in with their analysis, and I don't think they made a mistake there.
Go down.
That's how fucking unusual this is.
Yeah, go down a little bit. There's no animation. Is there an animation? It says below animation. Anyway.
They don't always show up.
Yeah.
All media items, depending on what your browser's doing.
Okay. Well, yeah, deluge, we've seen that. That's been happening. It's
This is just the most extreme example because it's the center of Sahara. So, yeah, but the videos are pouring out everywhere. Central Spain all last week, you know, should be hot and dry well into October.
Yeah, well, the south, it's variable, you know. It comes back, it's like today, southern half of Spain is hot.
It's hot again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wanted to post this. This is an example of what I was saying earlier on about. Well, it gives you an idea of the kind of deep state. And this is from an insider. This is, you know, Senator John Kennedy. He's the older Republican senator. He's kind of sassy. You know this guy?
Yeah.
He's good at questioning.
Southern boy.
Yeah. Have a listen to what he says.
You see the worst in people, you know.
In Washington, D.C.
I know many people in Washington, D.C. that would unplug your life support to charge their cell phone.
That's what you're dealing with. I mean, people don't realize, but that's the source of the problem right there. That's the source of all the bad things that are happening, is that type of person and that level of self-centeredness and corruption. You know, just expand that out. He's talking about people, he's using that as an analogy, but he's saying literally that's what they would do, that's the kind of attitude they have, that's their nature. And then you realize these are the people who are voting on whether to have war or not, whether to continue a war, whether to save people's lives, whether to give weapons to Israel, all that kind of stuff.
Stay in your home or you'll kill granny.
Yeah, that's the problem right there. And you have it straight from the horse's mouth. He's been in that milieu for decades, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And yet people keep believing them.
People just,
like you said,
turn away.
For ages, the single biggest problem is most people refuse to countenance the idea that people in government would do them harm.
Yeah, that they're out to get them, yeah. That they don't like them. That people
they actively harm them.
People in government don't like you, basically. Yeah. And they see you as separate and different from them.
And potentially
a threat to them. They fear you in a certain sense, in a vague kind of way, you know. They certainly are not well disposed toward you. But anyway, people will have to find that out and work that out themselves. Eventually they'll realize it. Maybe too late, but eventually they'll figure it out. Anyway, are we done?
I think so.
We're done, yeah. Although I have a quick question for you. What weighs more? A gallon of water or a gallon of butane? Take your time.
Well, a gallon isn't a unit of weight. Is butane a gas or a liquid? It's a gas, right?
I'll tell you that, Sola. You're never going to get there. A gallon of water weighs more.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's denser.
No, butane is a lighter fluid.
Ah, stop. I knew there was a trick in there. He'll be trying to work it out with logic.
Boom. So, there you go.
Puns trump all.
Yeah.
All logic.
Butane's a lighter fluid. Anyway, makes sense to me.
Did you read that somewhere, or is that... Was that
no, I figured that out, yeah. I figured that out myself.
Do you wake up on Sunday and go, I have it.
Yeah. There's certain things that just come to me. I'm like, I might publish that as a paper one of these. Anyway, yeah, so we're going to leave it there for this week, folks. Thanks for watching, listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to smash all the buttons. We'll be back next week with another show on whatever's been going on between now and then, whatever nonsense that's been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good week.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for watching.
Cheerio.
Can't stop the signal now.